He knew what his answer was. Long into the night, Brad searched for a way to get Kossoff to make the decision he wanted him to make. At Brad's behest, MC scanned all the mission protocols, seeking a loophole that would give Brad the authority to do what he wanted to do, show himself to the Gamins in his true form, free of the biosuit. The computer's bland-looking image smiled at Brad as it reported, "The safety regulations permit you to dispense with the biosuit's protection once the medical department has confirmed that you can breathe the planet's air without harmful effects." "I've done that," said Brad, sitting in the cockpit seat, surrounded by the shuttlecraft's controls and communications gear. It took a little more than 1 minute for MC to reply. "But you have not received clearance from the medical department." Brad thought for a moment, turning alternatives over in his mind. Then, tacit approval. After the delay, MC's image actually blinked. "Tacit approval?" Nodding vigorously, Brad said, "The fact that I've exposed myself to the local environment and the medical department hasn't raised any objections constitutes their tacit approval, doesn't it?" This time the time lag was noticeably longer. MC must be scanning every regulation in the protocols, Brad thought. "There is nothing in the mission protocols about tacit approval," the computer said at last. "Search the legal files," Brad commanded. "There must be something in there." Even scanning the files at nearly the speed of light, it took MC several minutes before it announced, "Tacit approval is recognized in the legal files." "And that's what we've got," Brad declared, grinning. "The medical department hasn't forbidden me to go outside without the biosuit. That's tacit approval." MC's image froze in the three-dimensional display for almost exactly 1 minute. Then, "There is a term from old nautical jargon for what you are doing, Brad. You are a shipboard lawyer." Brad laughed. "Whatever it takes," he said. "Get the job done. Whatever it takes." Unmasked. "Tacit approval?" Kossoff roared. It was early morning aboard Odysseus. Kossoff had risen from his bed and troubled dreams about a dark-haired woman who kept eluding him. After his morning ablutions, as he dressed, he called MC for a report on what Brad was doing. The master computer coolly informed him of Brad's legalistic handiwork. Half-dressed, tugging on his trousers, Kossoff sputtered, "He can't do that. He's got no right. He needs our approval. The medical department..." Dispassionately, MC replied, "He's already on his way to the village, without wearing his biosuit." Kossoff pulled up his trousers and fastened the belt, then sank down onto his rumpled bed. "Get Yamagata," he said, scowling. After half an hour of talking with the head of the medical department, Kossoff realized that Brad had threaded his way through the mission protocols very neatly. Yamagata had not forbidden Brad to go outside without his protective suit. "Indeed," said the Japanese biomedical director. "The young man seems eager to offer himself as a test subject, a guinea pig." "Indeed," Kossoff growled, and cut the connection. As the holographic display went dark, Kossoff realized he was still sitting on the edge of his bed, half-dressed, flustered, and feeling completely stymied. "He's damnably clever," Kossoff said to himself as he tugged on his slippers. "McDaniels is too clever for his own good. He's making me look like an incompetent, impotent old fool." "Going out on his own, is he?" Kossoff simmered. "All right. Sooner or later, he's going to take one step too far. And when he does, I'll be right there to chop the legs out from under him." Brad walked through the bright sunshine, unencumbered by his biosuit. He breathed the morning air, delighted at the strange yet not unpleasant odors of alien flowers and plants. Tiny animals scurried through the grass. The local equivalent of birds swooped colorfully overhead. As he started up the slope toward the village, he remembered an old poem from his school days. "God's in his heaven, all's right with the world." So far. He had taken the communications set and the computer translator from the biosuit and clipped them to the belt of his slacks, together with his laser pistol. The cochlear implants Yamagata had set in his skull picked up incoming transmissions easily enough. No need to wear earbuds. He was ready to show himself as he really was to the villagers. Were they ready to see him this way? We'll soon find out, Brad said to himself. The villagers were busy at their usual tasks, most of them in the farm fields, a few gathered at the entrance to the longhouse. That must be Mnx, Brad thought, in the middle of the group. He was nearly halfway down the hill before any of them noticed him. One of the gamins pointed, and Brad heard, "A stranger." They all turned and gaped at him. They've never shown any trace of violence, Brad reminded himself. The nearest thing to weapons they have are those puny hunting sticks. Still, his right hand grasped the butt of the laser pistol hanging from his belt. The gaggle at the longhouse seemed frozen, staring. "Hello," Brad called to them. "It's me, Brad." Mnx edged through the others and stared at him. "You are not Brad," he said, his voice sounding low, ominous, even in the computer's translation. Brad stopped some 20 meters from him. "I am Brad," he insisted. "And you are Mnx. Where's Ng? Out in the fields?" Slowly, Mnx stepped closer. The rest of the gamins remained rooted where they stood. "You are a stranger, yet you know my name." Putting on a smile, Brad said, "I truly am Brad. This is my true form." "True form?" "Until today, I wore a different form. I wanted to look as much like you as I could. Now we know each other well enough so that I can show myself to you as I really am." Mnx said slowly, suspiciously, "Your hands look like birds' hands, but their color is different." "This is the real color of my skin," Brad explained. One of the gamins said, "You look strange, very short." Before Brad could reply, another villager observed, "Your eyes are very small. There's a hole in your face." Brad said, "That's where I make the sounds you hear. That's how I speak. And there is fur on the top of your head." Spreading his arms, Brad replied, "I told you that my village is far from here. In the sky, you said. My body is different from yours in some ways." "Your old body was better." "My people made that body to look like your own as much as possible, but now I am showing you my true body." They stood inspecting him, none of them daring to come closer than several meters. "It is really me, Brad, your friend." None of them moved. "I have come to help you get through the coming winter, and to help you build a new village for the new folk." Mnx blinked his big bulbous eyes, a nictitating membrane sliding over them and then retreating back again. "You are really Brad?" "I am." Nerving himself, Brad held out his hand. Mnx hesitated, staring at it. Then at last took it in his own tentacled grip. Brad suppressed the shudder of revulsion at the feel of the alien's hand. He saw that Mnx seemed stiff, uneasy too. Once they released each other, Brad told him, "Soon there will be others like me to help you live through the winter and welcome the new folk when they rise out of the ground." Mnx turned to one of the gamins. "Run to the fields. Tell Ung and the others that Brad has returned to us." Brad let out a gust of pent-up breath. "He's accepted me," he thought. "Maybe not 100%, but it's a beginning." Suspicions. Captain Desai sat in the bridge's imposing command chair and watched the curving bulk of Planet Gamma slide across the main display screen. In the star-speckled sky, Beta was a blood-red crescent, safely distant and moving farther away. "Orbit established, sir," said his navigator, a slightly plump Jamaican woman, her skin nearly as dark as Desai's own. The parameters of their orbit sprang up on the screen, overlaying the view of Gamma. "Circularize orbit," Desai commanded. "Circularizing." Desai glanced around the bridge. 6 men and women were seated at their consoles, tapping out commands or staring at data on their screens. Busy work, he knew. The ship was actually controlled by the master computer. The humans on the bridge were redundant, a sop to the deep-seated human fear of being replaced by machine intelligence. Desai shook his head tolerantly. "We're here to make contact with alien intelligences, yet we're afraid of our own machines." With an inner smile, he remembered that the scientific staff had given the master computer a human avatar for them to interact with, and the crew had even given it a human name of sorts, MC. The mini bursts of thrust that adjusted their orbit around Gamma were barely noticeable. After several minutes, the navigator announced, "Orbit circularized, sir." Desai saw the parameter numbers on the central screen. "Good," he said as he got up from the chair. "Take the con. I'm going to see Professor Kossoff." Kossoff's office was only a few meters down the passageway from the bridge, but it was like stepping into a different world. The science staff wore no uniforms. They seemed to have no real discipline, just a gaggle of youngish men and women strolling leisurely along the passageway, chatting with one another casually. Desai wondered how Kossoff got any real work out of them. Kossoff's office door opened as soon as Desai presented himself before the security camera. The professor was at his desk, as usual, conversing with the master computer's avatar. He looked up and waved Desai to one of the chairs in front of his desk. MC's image in the hollow display blinked out as Desai dropped into one of the handsomely comfortable chairs. "We're in orbit around Gamma," the captain reported. With an unsmiling nod, Kossoff said merely, "Good. I presume you'll want to send a team to the ground as soon as possible." Kossoff heaved a weary sigh. "Yes, once I've checked out conditions on the ground with McDaniels." It was late afternoon. Mithra's glaring red orb was sliding toward the distant mountain ridge as Brad sat with Minx in the top floor of the longhouse. "Why did you wear your disguise?" Minx asked. He was seated at the end of a long table, with Brad at his right. It reminded Brad of Kossoff's conference table up in the starship, but he and Minx were the only two people in the big open room. "My people thought it would be easier for you to accept me if I looked as much like you as possible," Brad answered. For several heartbeats, Minx remained silent. Then, "Are you one of the Sky Masters, Rud?" Surprised, Brad replied, "No. My people come from far away. They live in the sky." "Careful," Brad warned himself. He's frightened of these Sky Masters, whatever they are. Slowly, Brad explained, "My people live on a world that is very much like yours. They can travel from their own world to yours through the sky, but the sky is not their true home." Minx sat in silence, trying to digest what Brad was telling him. The ropey tentacles of his hands kept uncoiling and then clenching again, his equivalent of tapping his fingernails, Brad thought. "The Sky Masters are very powerful," Minx said at last. "We have disobeyed them. We should have let the monsters kill us so that the new folk will have this village for themselves when they rise out of the ground." "You're afraid the Sky Masters will return and punish you?" "Yes. They are very powerful, and they will be angry at our disobedience."
"Surely they didn't want you to die," Brad said.
"Surely they did," Minx snapped.
"But you still live. You chose life over death. That is good."
Before Minx could object, Brad went on,
"My people will help you. Together we will build a new village for the new folk. You will all live, and you won't have to fear the monsters from Beta anymore, or the Sky Masters either."
Minx said, "Once this land was covered with villages, villages far bigger than what we have now. The Sky Masters destroyed them all. They send the monsters from Beta to kill us so that the new folk can have villages to live in when they come out of the ground."
"That's no way to live," Brad said.
"It is our way,"